Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel. I am here with two of my very favorite people, Demanda Martini and Scott Free, and we are going to talk all about Kraven the Hunter. Now, Kraven got some early focus on my show because we were doing a bunch of modern day books set in the Silver Age, and he weirdly fought the X-Men a handful of times, and then he got his own trial, and it was all about nipple lasers and nepotism and, crazy masculinity and all of his like knockdown drag out fights with shirtless boys and beasts in the wilderness before he died and then came back and murdered his family. All those stories. At the end of that trial, I have a mention where I'm like, someday I need to do a Patreon on Kraven the Hunter's gay mutant son, Alyosha Kraven, or Al. We'll just call him Al today. And we're going to talk all about him in a bit. But first, I want to discuss the recent flop cringe film, Kraven the Hunter, which I cannot fucking believe is a movie. Let me welcome both of my guests. Have you both introduced yourselves briefly, although my listeners know you well at this point. And I want to hear your preliminary reaction to seeing Kraven the Hunter. Let's
Scott Free, if you're listening to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon, you probably know who I am, and I am so sorry. The Kraven the Hunter film, I wouldn't say it's the worst superhero movie I've ever seen. That is Halle Berry's Catwoman. This was up there, though. This was not a good film. And I cannot emphasize enough that like Madame Web was bad and campy. This was just bad.
Yeah, camp is more fun than bad. This is action bad, not camp bad.
Hi, I'm Demanda Martini. So Kraven the Hunter. So two things is number one, I was promised very shirtless, very hot Aaron Taylor Johnson. I was talking with our friend Dax exclamation point last night, and she was like doing a live watch and sending me text. She was like, I'm up to 10 shirts. I'm mad. 10 different shirts. I'm upset. So number one, upset with that. I mean, he was still shirtless. He was still very hot. I
Right,
think
but it
that
was like, Chris Pratt takes his shirt off for one scene as Star Lord, and then that was it, kind
I
of.
mean,
Like
he was
the
definitely
beginning and
more
the end, and
shirtless
that was all we
than that.
got.
I mean, he's definitely more shirtless than like any of the MCU movies, but I feel like he could have been more. He is playing Kraven. But other than that, I agree with Scott. Like, it was bad action movie, but it wasn't like the worst. So I grew up with three brothers, and one of my brothers loved to go to our local Blair's video store and rent some of the worst action and horror movies. And like, that's what we do on Friday night. So I've seen a lot of bad movies. Like, Kraven and Madame Web, I'm like, these are fine. Like, they're not great cinematic masterpieces, but they're fine. Again, like, worst superhero movies. Like, I mean, The Flash exists.
Green Lantern is pretty
Yeah, oh yeah,
bad.
like Green
Anything
Lantern.
Marvel made in the 80s or 90s is pretty terrible.
Right, exactly. Like, oh, the Captain America where he like wears a helmet all of the time. There's the amazing, and by amazing, I mean again, like kind of campy Nick Fury movie starring David Hasselhoff. I mean, there's a lot of really terrible Marvel movies. Kraven is like somewhere in the middle bottom. Like, it's not the worst, but it's still not.
Speaking of middle bottoms, we have Scott Free here. I'm just kidding.
The term is power bottom.
So Kraven the Hunter in the comics is a camp villain, incredible Jack Kirby design, uber like sex appeal, regardless of its crazy 60s design, because he's wearing an open lion vest shirt and he's in tight pants and he's like the man's man who has to prove how man he is by manning. It's that energy. It's the incredible James De Matteis story, Kraven's Last Hunt, that really defines this character, really tying him into his Russian or Soviet upbringing with an abusive father and a mother who went insane, and he is carrying his family legacy. He's been around several decades at least. He's fathered some children. And then in this kind of final story, he's proving his worth as better than Spider-Man by burying Spidey alive, becoming a better version of Spider-Man. He takes his life at the end of the story. This movie kind of appropriates some of those storylines, but it in a very odd way. It was kind of a weird view into a parallel universe. In the comics, another thing DeMatteis really picks up on is Kraven has this relationship with his bastard half brother, the Chameleon, who's the old Spidey villain who shapeshifts. And there's a lot of like Chameleon trying to prove he can be better than Kraven, and Kraven like fucking smacking him around. There's some of that stuff in the comics as well, and this movie plays up on those parallels also. It was interesting performances. Who do you feel gave the best and worst performance in this film?
Russell Crowe was Russell Crowing. Like, he was like, I am like the overbearing, extremely like masked dad who's gonna again
He
like
was the
mob boss.
father of Kraven in this world, who Kraven could never get his approval.
Like he, I mean, when you're sort of like a one track character with that sort of like motivation of like just making sure that everyone knows that you're the man and you're the boss, like Russell Crowe did that. It was fine. The worst, I mean, aside from some of like our bit players, like the Foreigner, which again I was like, is he a real thing? Do I need, I'm like, I need to Google him
That's Silver
again.
Sable's ex-husband.
Yeah, ex yes, that's who that is. Yes, thank you. But like, I was like, why is he here? Like, why did we need this side villain? Like, he did not need to be here. His powers are completely unexplained why he has them. It was very gimmicky. I did not care for it. I'm very glad he took an arrow to the eye.
Also, the code name The Foreigner 2024 is just not the same,
Right, because also, hi, white man.
Scott, best and worst for you.
I'm gonna have to concur with Demanda on the Foreigner bit. I'm a Spider-Man nerd, and when the character first appears, I had this sort of visceral. I was like, is that the Foreigner? Are they putting in the Foreigner with his 10-second hypnosis abilities? And it's like at that point, I was just like, all right, brain's turning off. We're just gonna go through the rest of this. I mean, it was a deep pull. Like, I respect that, but the character added nothing to the story, and it felt like somebody took out one of the old Marvel handbooks, flipped through, and just goes, we're gonna put in this guy with this kind of offensive name in 2024. He's still called the Foreigner in the comics, by the way. Like,
Yes.
yeah, it was bad. Rhino, like,
Yeah.
I mean, Rhino was CGI'd out the wazoo,
I mean,
so
is his rhino powers like eczema?
yeah. So Rhino in this world, Rhino in our comics, Alexei Sitsevich puts on a big rhino suit that he gets stuck in, basically, and he charges around and he's like Juggernaut with a rhino suit and a horn on. He's fun. This guy was like a billionaire who was lonely, and because people didn't want to be his friend,
Yeah, like weak and sickly or something. He has
he
some kind of
had
disease.
Professor Miles Warren, the Jackal, who never shows up on screen, give him like a Bane backpack where he like has to have the venom in his system, but when he takes the backpack off, his skin will start growing like spores and hard calluses on it, and if he keeps it off too long, then he turns into a full rhino. And we get that moment toward the end of the film. It's completely unsatisfactory. And this man in his little backpack, you guys, I feel like there's a really fascinating research study to be done, like an academic paper, where we take really talented, like Shakespearean trained actors, and we tell them to play camp supervillains. There's like that lady who played Viper in the old Wolverine movie, woof. Halle Berry as Catwoman. There's people who do it right, Danny DeVito and Michelle Pfeiffer and Jack Nicholson, right? There's a lot of these villains, but then you go to like Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, and you're like, no. Like, I mean, still camp, but there's a bunch of these actors that I think are quite good in their profession. So Rhino, that actor, I could see him like trying to do little character nuances, little facial expressions and ticks and sounds, and I'm just like, oh, you're terrible. But I don't know that he knew he was terrible until it comes out in the film. Like, you see him trying so hard. And Calypso, the actress was fine, but that role served no fucking purpose in the entire movie, nor was she anything like her comic character at all.
As far as like wasted talent, getting someone like Ariana DeBose, who I have met in person and is super lovely, one of the nicest people that I've met. She's an Oscar winner. She's super talented. You know, she's like the multi-hyphenate, like all around talent. What? And she's just like comic book money. Sounds great. This is like the next step in my career. This is what's going on right now. And Calypso is kind of like a weird, crazy character. We talk about her. You know, we'll talk about her later in this Kraven nonsense.
We sure will.
I was introduced to Calypso on the Spider-Man cartoon. So I was like, oh, okay, like she's sort of like female Kraven, but like more like science-y, magic-y nonsense. Cool. And it's like she's a lawyer who gets this like family secret of like a potion, and she just happens to be in the right place with like no other like real connection to Kraven. And like they pulled this like weird like tarot reading into it, which I'm like, what is this?
Okay, so the basic plot here, Kraven and Chameleon are off at a school. Their dad comes with news that their mom has died. And then he, to prove their manhood or something, takes them to Africa to hunt a giant lion down. And Sergei gets grabbed by the lion. His dad ends up killing the lion, but Sergei's wounded, and Calypso happens to be there on safari. She's like a young kid also. She drops some potion in him, and like the lion's blood mixes, and now he becomes this like superhuman specimen. And he quits his family and moves to his like mother's private land in Russia, where he just wants to hunt down everyone who murders animals. And then his dad puts pressure on the brother to be a certain way, but then the brother gets kidnapped and Craven goes after him. It's fine. Madame Web, I was smiling all the way through. This one I went, okay, all right. Like, not the worst thing I've ever seen. I'll give it like a 4 out of 10. Action was good. The lead actor was pretty, but the kid who played the chameleon, it bothered me the whole film until I realized he's the kid who stayed in Hawaii at the end of White Lotus season 1. If you remember that rich family, I was like, oh, is that fucking kid?
The other thing is that you get the sense that like Craven already has superpowers, because like he like bonds with the lion before the lion attacks him. He's like already like one with the animals. It was was fine.
They do the classic first MCU movie thing where he doesn't get the iconic Craven look, really. Like, he finds the vest at the end from like his father, and it's like, I mean, you're setting this up for a sequel. No sequel is gonna be made from this. And for me, like, it exemplified the problems with all the Sony like Spider-Man movies that aren't Spider-Man movies, where Spider-Man exists as sort of this presence that's not there, but is sort of like lurking on the edges. Like, you get characters like Dr. Miles Warren, who, you know, is integral to like the death of Gwen Stacy, the Clone Saga, all these iconic Spider-Man stories, and he's just sort of mentioned as the guy who gives like the Rhino like his powers,
but also the Chameleon at the end.
And it's like, you clearly want to include Spider-Man, but you can't or won't. So he exists as sort of this negative space where like fans of Spider-Man are just like, oh, that's that character, and then that's that character, but there's no Peter Parker.
And the thing is, like, you can tell that the filmmakers are trying to do like an interconnected universe, but because they don't have the central character, it's all of these weird like satellites around like the point, because obviously like they're doing all of these villains, so it's like, oh, well, all of these are going to become like, you know, like the Sinister Six or like whatever, and like, but they don't have Spider-Man, so it's like, so then what are we doing? And like they also are trying to, because we have to care about these characters, they're taking these characters and doing the thing that I think we all agree like hate, which is taking a villain character and making them an anti-hero or hero in order to profit on them, instead of like their natural arc taking them to that.
So the three things I really liked, number one, and I'm not, I don't know, there's something about, I don't really love like a gym guy usually, right? Like, my husband's perfectly very handsome and like very lean and muscly and super sexy. I love him very much. But there's something about that guy in that movie taking his shirt off, and there's that like deep V cut and like strong abs and that like final pose he takes where he leans back in the chair. So three things you need from a Craven movie. Number one, the guy has to be so hot, and they did that part well. He's a beautiful person, that man. Second, the nature thing, right? You need to see Craven wrestling with animals. Now, in the comics, outside of Craven's nipple lasers, his ridiculous unreason is my favorite thing about him, to the point where it's almost offensive. Like, in the 70s, he keeps tigers in cages in his house, and once in a while, he lets them out so that he can beat them up and put them back in their cages. Or, like, there's several stories where Calypso, his girlfriend, like, helps him beat Spider-Man, but then he, like, punches her across the face or murders her or throws her off a building as a result, like, how dare you interfere? So they took the misogynistic part of that, but gave us the animal part, right? That was really interesting. The third thing we have to have in a Craven movie is legacy. And that's when we talk about Al Craven, it's all about legacy. He has this idea of his mother's legacy versus his father's legacy and how he fits into that. And that's very much the arc for this character, with a bunch of weird villains thrown in along the way. But the action sequences in this film were great. And like his injustice and like, I'm gonna murder the CEO of the company who ordered the animal deaths. Like, we're in this like time where that guy murdered the CEO in New York and everybody's like, whoa, it's a revolutionary, right? It captures some of that energy. I think those are the things I like most about it. So masculinity, legacy, and just overall like animal rights activism, like those parts felt good, I suppose.
Yeah, like in the grand scheme of like action movies or superhero movies, it's not bad. Like, it's not, I shouldn't say it's not bad. It's not the worst. universe of
It's
these
also
kind of.
not good.
Yeah, the plot is still very thin. You know, there's really like no character growth for a lot of the people. I will also say, for comic book people, I think it's hard for you to like catch us with a twist when we know who these characters are. Like, for example, I remember going to see the third Nolan Batman movie, and when Marion Cotillard came on screen, I was like, Oscar nominee Marion Cotillard is playing a no-name Batman character? I don't think so. That's Talia al Ghul. Like you're not fooling me, Christopher Nolan. So like the whole time I'm like, okay, so when's the chameleon gonna like start chameleoning? When's he gonna start, you know? Because I thought that maybe he was the one who was in charge of this whole.
But do you remember what Joan Crawford's last film was?
Trog?
1970 Trog. She's the
Yes.
guy in the gorilla mask. Delicious.
First of all, Trog is an amazing film. It's she plays a scientist. She does science things. It's great. I have seen Trog. It's wonderful. But anyway. So it's like for me. When I go see comic book movies, like you're not gonna catch me with a weird twist at the end because like we all kind of know who these characters are. So anyway, yada yada yada. It's fine. For those people who may not have seen it yet and if it's still in the theaters, just wait for it to be streaming. Like it'll be a fun little thing for you to have on while you're crafting.
It moved at a brisk pace. I mean, yeah, like to, you know, not to beat like a dead horse. It was just, it's very strange when you put it in the context of this is an iconic Spider-Man villain. You can't or won't mention Spider-Man and trying to turn Kraven into this sort of like brooding anti-hero who kills poachers and whatever. It's like, it's very strange. You could have called the character something else and like, it would have just been a bad action movie, but I think trying to tie it to like Sony's universe, whatever, it was just
But Kraven is one of those characters that in Spider-Man world people fucking love. They love this villain. They love to bring him back. They love what he represents. We get him in every universe. They're putting him in the new Ultimate Spider-Man currently. He is in every version and he's fun in that way of that kind of hyper-masculinity. The most cringe film moment I think in this for me, I love when there's a weird plot leap for no reason. Kraven blows a dart and like knocks a guy out and the foreigner gets the dart and like takes the poison out of the dart and is like, oh, this comes from the rare rosary pea that only grows in one region of Siberia. That must be where Kraven's base is. And I'm like, good lord. Those plot leaps always make
good
me
job, Batman. Your little detective work.
Like very Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. I will also say, because I went to see it in the theater, obviously, it's one of those movies where you don't feel bad when you have to go pee because you're not going to miss anything.
I don't go to the movies often, but let me tell you, seeing Wicked versus seeing Kraven were very different experiences.
Yeah, I'm going to wager I was the only person in that theater who'd read most of the appearances of the foreigner and the bit where the blow dart. And I was just like, I said to myself, I was just like, the foreigner is not that smart. I'm sorry. Like,
the foreigner is not that guy.
Don't insult me by doing this.
So let's talk about Sergei Kravinov in our comics. Again, we have a whole trial, so we're not going to delve deep here, but this guy is dead. He has some problematic stories along the way. One of them is the fact that he is very abusive toward his girlfriend, the voodoo queen Calypso, who like plays drums and takes over your mind. There's a bunch of stories about these characters. Calypso needs her own episode sometime. But then we start getting Kraven's kids. He has three separate children that show up in different eras. And you can really see like people want more Kraven stories because that Demata story was so amazing. We get Vlad Kraven, then we get Al Kraven, and then we get the only one who's okay, which is Anna Kraven, but also she's 12. Maybe not so great.
She's only 12 because, again, the comic book appearances that I saw for her, she's 12.
Yeah, when she first shows up, she's 12 years old, canonically in the comics.
Comic book artists are jail. Like, yeah. They all need to go to jail because that
in,
is
like,
not a 12-year-old.
Tight clothing, hunting Spider-Man, and she's 12. So she's probably like 16 in the comics now. Also, she's an Inhuman who went through Terrigenesis, and we don't know what her powers are. That's the thing about her that makes me crazy. It's been years, and no one's ever said what they are.
Well,
so, Kraven, let's begin with Vlad Kraven, who's the first Kraven kid that shows up before we get into Al. Demanda, do you want to tell us who Vladimir Kraven is?
Yes. So Vlad. So he's like
Favorite character, I know.
So he's like the child that like Kraven knows about and cares about and wants to like have and have be like the heir, shall we say. So he was raised by his father's servant Gregor in Russia and like lives on the Kraven estate and is raised to be sort of like the hunter and
But
all.
father figure, but also gay lover, right? It's very much giving like you're my protege, like I'm your daddy vibes. Those two, I don't know what your thoughts are there.
I mean, but that's all because Kraven is Kraven and all of the characters that are Kraven are all so mask, like they're so like overtly masculine that it turns into like Tom of Finland with all of them. Like it definitely is like you can't have this many really hot shirtless men doing like man stuff without somebody getting fucked. Like someone's going to have sex with someone.
But that man stuff is like, let's shirtless wrestle other men and.
Exactly. Let's shirtless wrestle other men. Let's sword fight. Let's go hunting together where we have to be very quiet and in tight quarters and just visceral and irregardlessly. So obviously they're all fucking. It's fine. They're also hanging out with this guy Merkendale, who has his own
Jason McIndale, he's like the
McIndale.
jack-o'-lantern and the hobgoblin sometimes. He
Yeah.
actually has a pretty extensive Spider-Man history, that guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so he has like his own history. He's a whole person. And this guy has given Vlad another version of the Kraven serum. So he's, all buff and doing the Kraven things. He goes by the Grim Hunter, which is dumb, but again, whatever. They're all fighting, they're doing stuff, and eventually Vlad gets killed by Kane. He's like the evil clone, right? Again,
At least at the time. At the
Yeah.
time.
I told Scott when he started his Spider-Man podcast, like I'm a person that I've read a lot of Wikipedia. I've read a lot of like articles about a lot of different characters. So I have like sort of a base knowledge of a lot of Marvel lore. But Spider-Man is something that I really don't fuck with. I read Maximum Carnage for a podcast. I've read that story, but like everything else, I'm like, I think that's what this is, but it's a lot. I'm already like
Spidey's got
nipple
some
deep into
clones.
X-Men.
Spidey's got some clones, and Kane's the bad one. That's enough for you. So Vlad, the pieces I'll mention that are kind of relevant really quickly. He seems to be the favored son. He
Yes.
is you, again. You have the Sergei chameleon. One's the bastard son thing, right? Where
Right.
Al, the one we're going to talk about, is more the bastard son. Vlad lives in like the family estate. He's like the cute rich nepo baby who like lives with his gay older father figure. That's very much the vibe. And he gets his like dad's journals and potions and gives himself like super strength. And like he lives in the family like mansion and then moves to the Kraven's mansion in America. So his fights with Spidey, there's multiple pages of him fighting animals naked. Like he strips all his clothes off and he's romping around. And eventually, again, he dies in Gregor's arms. He dies like in his old boyfriend's arms.
Of
So remember
course.
that guy. He's going to get resurrected in a while, but he is kind of an odd dive into the Kraven universe before Al does it a little better, but not much. Scott, did you have thoughts on Kane and the murder of Vlad?
The thing you have to remember about Vlad is he's actually really bad at his job. His job is to hunt Spider-Man, and when he shows up in New York, he actually only encounters Peter Parker like once. He spends most of his time mistakenly hunting Ben Reilly, who's shown up, and then they fight, and he's like, "Oh, you smell exactly like Peter, but you're not Peter." And then Kane just shows up, who also smells like Peter, and Kane has just like a death touch, sort of the mark of Kane, and he just slaps him in the face and kills him. And it's just like, and Gregor is just like, no, my son, he is dead, but he's also kind of my lover, but he is dead." And it's just like,
Gregor then goes on to fight Kazar and Shanna in the Savage Land and that Mark Waid title. Weird, just a weird section of Marvel continuity.
the whole family is like, and this will come up multiple times throughout this episode, this whole family is really fucked up. And the original Kraven is the only one who's kind of decent at his job. The children are various levels of fail. And Vlad's death is kind of funny, just in the context of Spider-Man stories. It's the Clone Saga. He comes out of nowhere and it's just like, oh, it's the Grim Hunter. And then he dies within 4 issues.
I love when Jam DeMatteis takes a character, like a camp villain, villain and does like a long arc with them. I love when he does it with Puppet Master in Silver Surfer. I love when he does it with Kraven the Hunter. He's good at this. He also gives us a lot of camp villains, which is great. This is the White Rabbit creator. Like, there's a bunch of just odd little dudes that fit under this guy. The Legion of Losers is a J.M.J. Mateus thing. So when he brings Alyosha Kravinoff or Al into the picture, it's during mostly a chameleon story where Ashley Kafka is the psychiatrist who later becomes like one of the goblin ladies down the line. Maybe it's her clone, I can't remember. Anyway, she's treating the chameleon in Ravencroft, and it's very much about him. Chameleon's like taking on Kraven's form and like challenging his own family legacy, and then like Kraven's son actually shows up. So it's initially kind of a pathos during a chameleon story, but Al is drawn like, good lord, like cover of romance novel, lion mane vest, like zebra belt, cheetah print pants. He has bulge in a way that the old Kraven just never did in the 80s. Like big old beard, rifle, whip. He's like very extra. And a lot of his early story is about him going after Chameleon and like really like, I'm the dad. He's like believing, like making Chameleon believe I'm actually Sergei. And like Chameleon is slowly going mad. And he really enjoys this process of like driving Chameleon slowly crazy as he's starting to take like everything his dad had. He gets his dad's serums, his dad's estate, and soon he fucks his dad's old girlfriend, pretending to be his father. So Calypso has sex with Al a few times. And then when Al is like kind of flippant and like, no, actually, I'm his kid, she's like, curse you, I'll get my revenge. And he like hits her across the face kind of energy. He's a very odd character and he kind of gets a slow build over a little while in the comics. And the way he appears distinctly different from Vlad, who's the more flop son, which is saying something because Al's not a great character. But when you compare the two, this is very much Sergei from the movie being better than Dimitri, the chameleon from the movie. But we have Al being better than Vlad.
The thing that always gets me is all these characters want to, they all take the title of Kraven, and it gets very convoluted when you're trying to read these things. And it gets convoluted to the point where, as you mentioned, he sleeps with Calypso. Calypso thinks he's Kraven when they sleep together. And it's like, you've slept with the original Kraven, who was about 30 years older and bigger, and yet you think this is the same guy who's in his like 20s and is very clearly not his father.
So there's a scene where he fucks Calypso, brags like, haha, I'm not actually Sergei, and then goes outside and like wrestles with his like lion, tiger, and gorilla that he like hangs around with. And then after sex, after making her humiliated, he says, thank you, my pets. This is just what I needed to help me relax. Like, very odd. He's an odd guy. He's the bastard son in the way that Sergei was, in a way, the own version of the bastard son, when really Chameleon was the bastard son. That's kind of the energy, the legacy of it, but he's an odd character that's drawn incredibly hot.
Right. So he's definitely like the prettier one. But also, Al grows up in like the fucking jungle. Like he never has any contact. He also doesn't people very well. Like he doesn't interact with people like very often. He's a very odd duck and he doesn't make sense.
There is a lot of sex in him though, right? Like there's a spot where there's a battle where he fights Spidey and there's a lot of like camera upshots up his loincloth, and like there's a scene where he like catches Spidey in his thighs and then does like a move where he slams him on the ground. Like he's a very horny character.
Because he was introduced in like the 90s, right? Where things are, you're allowed to be a little more overtly sexual. You're allowed to be a little more overt. Like people are allowed to be like hot and he definitely does do a lot of like, I'm going to lay on your face with my thighs. I am
Or
going
sit
to.
on your face and tell you about my origins while you're trapped down there.
Yes, he and I think, again, not to like read too much into this terrible character, but again, I think that's part of like the he is an animal because he grew up with animals, where he's just like, I'm gonna put my dick in your face and then I'm gonna make you feel awkward and then I'm going to tell you the things that I need to tell you.
So to get into his origin, the way he initially explains it to Spider-Man, direct quote, and I'm not going to do an accent here. I was born in the heart of the African jungle 21 years ago, born and raised there. Unlike my father and my half-brother Vladimir, I never knew life in so-called civilization. Oh, my father provided me with tutors. I was taught about history, poetry, philosophy, and art. But these were all abstractions, words and pictures in books, distant echoes from the world of man. The only reality I knew was the reality of the beast. So there's a big giant fight with Spider-Man. He wants to like understand his father, so he's like acquiring everything whatever. Like, I needed to fuck my dad's woman. I needed to fight my dad's arch foe. And by doing all of this, I can understand who I was. Quote, and the life I've lived all these lonely years. Sergei appeared only periodically in my life, but he was never there long enough for me to actually know him. He remained mysterious, aloof. My human contacts were limited to my servile tutors and the primitive tribesmen I sometimes lived with. But my only true friends were the beasts themselves. I found freedom, contentment among the creatures of the wild. But as I grew older, my curiosity about the outside world grew. The reason I attacked you tonight was not to take revenge upon you, not to turn you. No, I needed to taste your presence and power, to enter your very consciousness. I needed to fuck you, Spider-Man. You see, I need to know him, Spider, the way that you did. I want to see him through your eyes. I have my father's diaries, and they make it painfully clear that as the years passed, Sergei grew more and more unstable. The madness that claimed his own mother ultimately claimed him. But even these diaries are only words on a page. You, of all who live, can bring those words to life for me. Okay, so let's pause here, and maybe my favorite thing about this character is something that's never explored. He powers himself up with his dad's potions, but we learn later also that this is a mutant kid. So Anna is an inhuman, Vlad is a flop, Al is a mutant. And do you guys know what Al's mutant power is? He's fucking Dr. Doolittle. He can talk to animals.
Oh.
So the idea of like his power activating in his youth and his only companions are like his little jungle friends, it's very like Kazar or Tarzan or Mowgli in that way. And that's the part of the character that I almost attach to the most, but they never really do anything with it. Any thoughts there?
I mean, I guess that's how he convinced that elephant to get on top of the skyscraper.
Yeah,
pachyderm up on the roof, Spidey says.
Yeah, it's the only one of his powers that's not like a duplicate of his father's. So yeah, by the process of elimination, it has to be like his mutant power. And I mean, he uses it like in the horrible Hollywood story to talk to his dog at the very end of the story. And when I reread that, I'd forgotten that his actual ability was to talk to animals until the very end, when I was like, oh yeah, he can talk to his dog. And it's completely unexplained in the story, like other than the fact that he mentions a couple times explicitly that he is a mutant, you wouldn't know.
We'll get to Get Kraven in a minute. Good lord, one of the worst things Marvel has ever put out, in my opinion. Just woof. But yeah, let's pause there for a second. So Calypso attacks, blows up Kraven's building, kills his pets except for his lion, who by the way is named Gulyadin. Kraven can't even grieve because Calypso casts a spell. She turns Kraven and Spidey into like savages, fight to the death. And they break the spell, and Al ends up apologizing to Calypso at the end. So there's some redeemable energy once he gets through his dad's like madness, but then he goes home and kills all of Calypso's men. So maybe not. We have this kind of odd moments with him. We jump to Fantastic Four, Volume 3, Number 9. And this is where a bunch of writers just start bringing Kraven in. And it's kind of like the modern comics. Kraven is dead again, but he has a cloned son of himself that's now running around as the new Kraven. And he shows up everywhere because everyone wants Kraven, and again, it's more legacy. This is Kraven's children were all so terrible that he had to kill them all and then like clone himself to be his child so that he could die again. That's where that story winds up. But in this era, Al is the Kraven that's jumping all over the comic books. He's written by Claremont in Fantastic Four, Volume 3, Number 9, where he's like fighting some monsters. There's a teleporting smaller version of Lockjaw. Don't worry about it. We jump to Black Panther, Volume 3, Number 6 and 7, which is a series I fucking love. Priest's Black Panther in the 90s is amazing. And there's like a very horny fight between Kraven and Black Panther in like the White House kitchen. They like stab each other, and there's it's very fuck me harder, more energy between the two of them, which is really fun in its way. The old Kraven, we'd see Kraven versus Tigra, Kraven versus Kazar, right? Like this character fits in a lot of places. He's back in like Amazing Spider-Man Volume 2 and Peter Parker Spider-Man Volume 2, where there's like a crossover where he's part of the Sinister Six now, which is a terrible place for this guy. He is moving around and kind of just trying to figure out his place in the city. There's a moment where Spidey calls him out. I thought you were like your father, I remember, but you're nothing less than a killer. And Al says, you know nothing of me. The world's a vicious place, Spider-Man. We must consume it before it consumes us. Look at what it did to my father. I won't let it happen to me. And there's no consistency, though. That's the thing with this guy, is he's just jumping around as a supervillain. Sinister Six, he's back in like the bar with no name. Well, Well, actually, this is the part where we should pause, because then we get a new creator that takes over this guy and gives us a very different story afterward. Do you have thoughts on this kind of interim space for Al Craven, kind of living in his father's shadow, doing all the things his dad did, fighting superheroes around the country? Fine.
They created this character so that way people can like sort of play with him and have Craven, and he seems to still like be in any character that has any sort of like animal connection. He's gonna show up and like be the villain of the week. It's fine.
Yeah, he appears actually in some interesting comics. Like you mentioned the Priest run on Black Panther. I think he works with White Wolf, you know,
Oh yeah,
against
Hunter
like
the White Wolf, yeah.
yeah, against Black Panther. The Sinister Six stuff is actually kind of interesting. Like he fights Venom. Venom's pissed that he wasn't invited to join the new Sinister Six. There's some weird stuff with like the Zanox, even where he helps hunt like Senator Ward, who's possessed by the Zanox and Spider-Man. It's very convoluted. He shows up in like actually some interesting places, but I feel like in this era they don't quite know what to do with him, because you have some people who are trying to position him as like more heroic, and then there's other people who are just using him as sort of a stand-in for his father.
Which we can read as him finding his path, right? Like he's out of the jungle and in the city and figuring himself out.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Right? Okay. There's a thing where, like, an artist, an original artist, will put out an album and they're super talented and they get acquired by whatever company who, like, makes them fucking sign their life and their next 12 albums away, right? So their first album is all about their life and their poetry. And then their second album is always like, oh my God, I'm singing songs about how terrible the industry is and how it's sucking my soul away and all my fans suck and I have no life. Do you know that thing? Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they're like, there's the inevitable, like, the industry has burn me out energy. I got to introduce a guy here really quickly named Ron Zimmerman before we get to this final part. Ron Zimmerman was a film and television producer who did like stand-up comedy. He died, I think, 2 years ago at the age of 64 of cancer. He worked on the Friday the 13th TV series. He worked for The One, which was a sci-fi film. He worked on things like Shake It Up and The Michael Richards Show. He was a regular guest on Howard Stern, which fucking remember that fact in just a moment. He also had a long gig recruited after an appearance on Howard Stern, where Marvel brought him in to write the series Spider-Man Get Kraven. He ended up working on The Punisher, Captain Marvel, and Spider-Man as well. He's also the writer, and some people will know this reference, although we won't spend time here today. He also wrote Rawhide Kid in the Max
Yes.
line with the gay innuendo cowboy. This guy was some sort of like cis het, a little bit of incel guy who like thought he was a big deal, and his mom told him his whole life he was really special. And then he went to Hollywood and kind of got burnt out and hung out with Howard Stern a bunch. And then he came to Marvel and chose Al Craven as the vessel to tell his life story. That's kind of the pathos that you need before we get to this last section. Scott, did you look into Ron Zimmerman at all?
I knew Ron Zimmerman from, I mean, the Rawhide Kid story, Slap Leather, is iconic.
Woof, though.
It's so bad. I have a copy of the of this on my shelf somewhere. And
I was gonna say, I think I've got it over here
yeah,
on my shelf too.
it's one of those things where I remember rereading it and I'm just like, I have to look into the guy who wrote this. And first of all, I was shocked that he was straight. And
Oh, I
it's just
wasn't.
yeah, fair. I did know a little bit about him, and when you're aware of like his backstory, like there's a character, and we'll get into it, in Get Kraven, who's a struggling screenwriter who keeps trying to kill himself and failing. And I'm like, oh, this feels a little personal. This character feels a little personal.
So it starts with there's an anthology title called Spider-Man's Tangled Web that's running through this time, and they're giving people a chance to tell kind of avant-garde Spidey stories. This two-parter in 1314 is actually kind of good, and you can kind of see what Zimmerman was trying to do with before we get to the Get Kraven series. It Al Craven shows up at the bar with no name, and he's had like a completely weird makeover. It's long hair, glasses, white button-down shirt, blue open suit jacket. Like, he's saying things like, there's very few rules left in the world anymore. I'm sad to say, except in the jungle. The jungle has endless rules. Drives you nuts. Don't eat that. That'll eat you. Those people can't speak English. That plant is poison. That snake is harmless. Zebras do attack. That's not how to make a spear. Learn to read drum beats. Blah, blah, blah. This is very much giving me Ron Zimmer and moved to Hollywood and was like reminiscing about home. So Al is referencing the $30 million that he suddenly inherited from his dead father. He fights with Tombstone, and there's a moment where he walks over and grabs Tombstone's dick during the fight and squeezes it so to get Tombstone to de-escalate. So this is the early 2000s, folks. It's the reality TV show era of our books. This is when Ecstatics was coming out, if that helps. And there's a moment where we meet him dating a new girl named Timber. And Timber is kind of a try hard, wanting to make it big in Hollywood, one beautiful girl in a sea of beautiful girls, but she's dedicated to Al. And Vulture is here. And Vulture, fucking Al Craven hates Vulture. Vulture is drawn as this like lecherous, creepy, washed up, like 90-year-old man still hanging out at the bar and flirting with the 20-year-olds. So will you two read this section of dialogue? Scott, if you'll read Vulture, and Demanda, if you'll read Al Craven here.
Sure.
So there's a moment where Vulture flirts with Timber.
Bring it up. Oh, this is sickening. She didn't tell me she was your girlfriend.
Go take a pill. We went out a few times. No biggie. Can you just relax?
What, I can't like a girl?
No, you can't like a girl. You can like a woman. Look, there's a new invention called a mirror you might want to go check out. Lots of answers in there for you. Trust me. You're an old, ugly, bald dude named after an old, ugly, bald bird. Going out with a cute young girl is not an option for you.
Okay, so Craven grabs Timber's ass and basically says, well, that made me feel better. And then he tells a story about how he recently was fighting Johnny Storm.
I see Johnny Storm flying at me like he's being paid for it. I've always detested this punk. And he's been dying to, and I've been dying to kick his snotty little butt when Ben Grimm isn't around to protect him.
So he calls him Richie Rich. He calls him dumb. He sprays him with a hose, talks about like the kid being all mouth. And then he gets sprayed in the face with Spider-Man's webbing. And it's hard not to read this as sexual. Here's the direct dialogue. He says,
so it's going good for me. And all of a sudden I get a mouthful of that damn webbing.
He gets arrested. He's clearly fucking his lawyer who comes and gets him out of jail. And now we're back at the bar and he says,
you know who is just gorgeous? Jean Grey. What I would give for a shot at her.
And Vulture says,
I could get her, you know, if I was set up right.
Yeah. And that right setup would be what? A day after she's struck deaf, dumb, and blind?
Come on, she's going out with Cyclops. I always thought that was one of those arranged deals like they do in Hollywood. He's a bigger freak than me.
Implying like lavender marriage, right?
Yeah.
Come on, you're the Vulture, dude. That's about as sexy as chemotherapy. You'd get more honeys if you called yourself the gerbil.
And then he comments on how hot Cyclops is. And then he fat shames the Invisible Woman. And then he says that the Wasp dresses like she's 14. And then he says that he went out with Silver Sable and he calls her narcissistic because she didn't ask more questions about him during the date. And then he claims that he fucked the Black Widow and Alyssa Milano. And then he insults Vulture some more and he rants about how hard the world is for men. But then Norman Osborn's in the bar and was like, well, I killed Spider-Man's girlfriend, which basically shuts everyone up. It's like that scene in Batman where like the four supervillains are playing cards and they're each talking about the time it's great, right? This is a weirdly rad scene despite the misogyny and crazy. There's a lot of like weird homosexual undertones in the midst of this like hyper-masculine.
I mean, like you explaining who this guy was, like because again, it's like the whole hyper-mask incel, like self-insert thing that then turns immediately homoerotic because it's like, dude, like you guys are talking about dude stuff and like, so why is your dick out right now? What's happening?
And let's not fat shame and let's not age shame, but also his dialogue with the Vulture is really funny too.
I mean, listen, it is funny, but it also like, it's also such a weird turn because like you, again, like reading this and say, like, this is not Al Craven. Well, this is Al Craven. This isn't Alyosha, you know, kind of a thing. Like
it's a wild, it's a wild change for this character.
Yes. And
Yeah.
it's like all of a sudden, for whatever reason, this guy who is all about like finding out who his dad was because he was the leftover bastard child is now like, do you know what? I'm done being sad boy now. I'm going to turn myself into, again, he like read
He
some
inherited $30 million.
Yeah, he read some like dude manifesto online and is now like, I'm going to be a dude now.
Well, and it, you know, the context that Zimmerman was a frequent guest on like Howard Stern also puts a lot of this in perspective, because like the dialogue between Al and the Vulture is some, like, that could be Howard Stern and Zimmerman.
Yes.
Seamlessly.
Just like fat shaming, slut shaming, like call it's it. I mean, that's what the fucking Howard Stern show is, while ranting about how hard the world is for men. So it picks up, this guy, Zimmerman gets to take this character. It's supposed to be a 7-issue limited series, but it gets turned into a 6-issue limited series. And then there's a follow-up called Spider-Man Sweet Charity. But there's a 6-issue limited series called Spider-Man Get Kraven. And it's fucking crazy, you guys. Crazy, crazy. Scott, will you take this one?
Yeah. So I'm going to preface the Spider-Man Get Kraven section by starting off by saying, I first read this when it came out in 2002. I was 12. And this was probably not appropriate in parts.
Sorry, that was me literally taking a chest shot for you saying that you were 12 in 2002.
It has not aged particularly well. It is a product of its time. There are things in there that in this that I would actually say, even for 2002, were very questionable in terms of dialogue and some of the story. But essentially, Al decides he's going to move out to Hollywood and use his dad's money to make movies because he's sick and tired of how crappy modern movies are. All the covers are spoofs of like Hollywood, of like famous movies. Like issue one is just him in a director's chair. Issue two is a Jaws parody. Issue three is Scarface. Four is Home Alone. And it's just like, it's a very strange book, because while Build is a Spider-Man story, Spider-Man's only in the first and the last issue.
I picture James Franco playing Al in this series, but please go ahead.
I could see it. James Franco, or God, what was the guy's like, Mark, he'll come back to me by the end of this. I'll remember after. He moves out to Hollywood and decides it's interwoven with the story about this screenplay writer who is very clearly the Zimmerman stand-in. The guy pitches a script to these two brothers who are clearly stand-ins for the Weinsteins. And
they're drawn as these like morbidly obese mojo style characters, just shoving food in their face and like ranting about like avarice and greed and sloth. Like it's they're gross.
Yeah, it's just the Rothsteins. It's very subtle Weinstein thing. They buy his script, which is about like cancer and how, you know, there's conspiracies to suppress like treatments for cancer and cure, and it's supposed to be serious. They buy the script, they hire Kevin Smith to do a rewrite and turn it into a comedy, and the guy bankrupts himself buying the script back from them. And it just starts this whole downward trajectory where it's interspersed with Kraven out there with the screenwriter sort of increasingly black comedy style trying to kill himself and like failing, and he becomes homeless, and it's very strange.
And Kraven's like, I have all this money and just no place to put it. He sets up his own like film studio.
Uncle Dimitri breaks out of Ravencroft and is convinced that he is Kraven, so he's also like stalking Al.
And Timber, Uncle Dimitri is the chameleon, everybody, if you're not
tracking. Yeah. The original Spider-Man supervillain, he fights him all the way back in Amazing Spider-Man 1. Timber's trying to become an actress. She's auditioning for essentially a thinly veiled version of That 70s Show set in the 60s. She beats up the casting guys when they insult her.
They're like super sexually inappropriate with her, and yeah, she like doesn't take it.
Yeah, and she has Kraven's, Al's trained wolf Nickel with her, and she uses Nickel to threaten to attack them. She becomes the vice president of Kraven's studio. They're looking for a script. He buys Scott Baio's house. What is particularly strange for a Marvel comic is all the references to real people. The Kevin Smith references, Scott Baio shows up as a character. He's just like a character in this briefly. And I question some of the editorial decisions behind this book, where no one was just like, oh, hey, should we just have like Scott Baio, or should we make fun of Kevin Smith and call him?
Well,
like,
and this is post-Marvel bankruptcy, right? Marvel has hired Kevin Smith at this point. Like, Kevin Smith was writing Daredevil for a while.
Yeah, Kevin Smith is writing for Marvel and DC see at this point. And like the screenwriter goes on a rant about how Kevin Smith's like a hack. It's Zimmerman working out his own issues over six, although supposed to be seven, and they cut one of the issues. Six issues.
Basically, how does it end? I mean, it's one of the worst things I have ever read in any Marvel comic in 40 years of reading comic books.
I'll preface this by saying that anyone who is going to read this, it's wildly transphobic. In the end, the Al teams up with the Vulture. The Vulture comes out to work with Al. They're friends now in the production company. The Rothsteins are trying to get at Al because the head of the studio is one of Craven's other bastard children. He never pops up again. Don't worry about it. He's out to get Al because he feels that Al, you know, isn't deserving of the Craven title or whatever. The Vulture and Al attack the Rothsteins. The Vulture, Al cuts out their tongues. It's very heavily implied that the Vulture castrates them. And then they show back up as women, and they've changed their names and are now presenting as women. But they're still morbidly obese, disgusting, doing all the same stuff. And Dimitri, the chameleon, thinking he's Craven, kills the bastard brother who's the head of the studio. And then Al and the Vulture go back to New York and become vigilantes.
Well, but the Rothsteins, the reason Craven crosses the line, the Rothsteins basically like burn down a studio, and then they brutally, violently, repeatedly gang rape his girlfriend. They send some mercenaries to like go after Craven, and it's implied, like it's stated right on the page, like Timber is like almost in a coma after she has been sexually assaulted so badly that she has no like will left. And it's implied that she survives and that she sticks around afterward. But it's almost like this odd parody. And again, when you put it in the Howard Stern context of like, look, I'm this good guy who came to Hollywood with like good goals and good intentions, and they just took everything I had. They burned my house down. They took my fortune. They took my virtue. They raped my girl. And now I just got to go live a different life. I fucking hate this series. They cut it one issue before the end. I don't know what the reason for ending it was, but what possibly was left to happen in this fucking goddamn series? I hate it so much.
Yeah, most of it's played for jokes, which have not aged well. And then, yeah, you get to the final issue and it's just like, okay, Timber's been gang raped. They shot his dog.
Oh yeah, they killed the wolf too. Yeah, yeah.
And then Al, they castrate the rapists who then become women. And like, I don't know what the message from this comic is beyond Ron Zimmerman was really pissed off at Hollywood. And no one at Marvel editorial said, this is horrible. This is
Ron Zimmerman using Kraven the Hunter and trying in a weird way, I think, to do like a Quentin Tarantino film almost. It's a very weird series. Domenda, you have feelings. I could see your face over there.
Like, is he also trying to like make a commentary? And again, I can never pronounce their last names, but the sisters who did The Matrix.
I mean, maybe, because they're trans, right?
Yeah, but at the time when this was written, I don't know whether or not one or both of them were out. Because I know one came out like way before the other one eventually did. Either way, that's gross. I'm very glad that you just said Scott is taking care of this and I did not look into it, because I would be much more upset than I am right now.
I would say probably the worst comic that I've read by one of the big two, in terms of like...
Rawhide Kid is very digestible compared to this.
Yeah. You get in again into the like the camp thing where it's like you can read Rawhide Kid camp. This is not camp. This is like they gave a gross Howard Stern sidekick a comic where he's just going to rant about people for six issues.
Yeah, it's very non-action. It's very talking heads. It feels like a short film. It feels like an Oscar film where like this art style is like very avaricious, right?
And when you asked, you know, me to be on this episode, it's like this to me, because I read it when it first came out, this to me has always been my image of Al Craven in my head, and I always associate Al with this very just like disgusting sort of story. And even when I've encountered him in other comics over the years, this is always like fixed in my head, where it was this was the character that Ron Zimmerman used for this disgusting comic that's just a criticism of Hollywood.
So The Matrix came out in 1999. The Wachowski sisters were using their dead names at that point. I'm assuming that they were out to each other or to themselves, and it was probably kind of whispered and known in Hollywood. And it certainly is a commentary against everyone who's successful, right? The cover homages to like classic films. This is a weird fucking series, and I hate it.
So the other thing is, like, at this time, this was also like when The Boys came out, which is one of my least favorite things that I've ever had to read. And also my absolutely, like, the worst thing I've ever read. And again, I had to read it for a podcast that I used to be on. Worst, absolutely the worst thing. I was so offended and disgusted by it, but it's in the same vein of like kind of that 2000s gross out boy humor where we're going to be offensive and like overly sexual and super violent. And it's called The Pro, where an alien accidentally gives a sex worker superpowers. And it's one of, and by one of, it, it's the worst thing I've ever read. And I want to say it's also by like Sarah Connor, which is crazy, but it's awful. And like this kind of has that same vibe, and it's that same time period, that early 2000s, where we're going to be over the top and offensive and problematic and sexual and violent because we can be, versus having it be of any substance.
There are likely people out there in this industry who know more of the ins and outs of this series, who know more of what the parallels were and like who the specific targets of these stories were. Maybe Timber represents someone that fucking Zimmerman was mad at, like this well-meaning actress who got gang raped at the end. It's a rough story. We will never talk about it on this show ever again, because I'm not going to do a Vulture or a Chameleon episode anytime soon, and no one else shows up here. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, the brothers, I mean, I've always heard the brothers were stand-ins for the Weinsteins, whose behavior was very well known in Hollywood, but no one ever did anything about it really until Harvey Weinstein went down. But it's still...
So Al gets two more big stories before the final one, the final hunt, which we'll talk about. So Beyond is a weird 6-issue Marvel series that's kind of fun, but it's weird to read. The art's weird. It's fun though. This is where the Stranger like pulls a bunch of Earth heroes to Battle World, like trying to be the Beyonder, and a bunch of people die. There's like a set of mass graves, and like every time the heroes fail, he'll pull some more in. So Al Craven gets pulled up with a group that includes the Hood, Venom, Spider-Man, Medusa, the Wasp, Hank Pym, Firebird, and Gravity. And they all have to like fight. Stranger fights the Hood. He calls Hank Pym fat once. He sees Spider-Man get stabbed, but actually Spider-Man's a space phantom. It wasn't Spider-Man at all. He whips Venom into submission. He fights Dragon Man. He calls the Watcher a cosmic voyeur. They fight the Stranger. They get sent back to Earth. And he gets a bunch of dialogue. There are lines like, shrinkage is nothing to joke about. Trouble's my middle name. Then we get him in a Punisher War Journal series, which is, this is a weird series too. This is Rick Remender's Punisher, where Kraven goes crazy. He's drinking potions and he starts capturing animal-themed supervillains and locking them in cages. So like Rhino, Vulture, Tiger Shark, Aragorn the Winged Horse, Frogman, Bushmaster, Mandrill, Mongoose, Manbull, Gargoyle, Dragon Man, Kangaroo, Worm, and Grizzly are all among the villains here. He's lording over his new animal menagerie. They're all in collars. He kills Valkyrie's winged horse and like blows her up, and then feeds the horse to the prisoners at one point. He captures the Punisher and then ends up like opening the lizard brains of his, like, he drives his captives mad and they have to fight the Punisher, and Punisher wins in the end. Weird, weird story, which is oddly parallel to the Kraven the Hunter resurrection story that we'll get to in just a minute. So remember the weird menagerie story. Okay. Let's talk about Spider-Man One More Day, where we get the penultimate Sergei the Kravenoff back from the dead story. Demanda, do you want to talk about this one? Kraven has another daughter. Her name is Anastasia or Anna, and she has a mother named Sasha, who's a rich, inhuman, crazy woman from Russia.
She has this plan. She and Anna have this plan to bring back Sergei, to bring back the original Kraven the Hunter. But they have to go through all of this stuff, and their whole thing thing is they have to use spider people to do this, which is insane. And again, and I know we kind of talked about this in the Madam Web episode. I know we kind of talked about this and other stuff, but their first thing that they do is they, to test it, much like in, to bring this X-Men light, when the Red Queen wants to resurrect herself, but first they use the same spell to bring Psylocke back, but bring her back in her original body kind of a thing. It's that, like, they want to test it first before they, like, do the real thing. So they bring, this is my favorite part, they bring back Vlad, but he's a lion man. Like, he's literally just, like, this giant lion man.
But they bring back Vlad by killing Kane.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. So they kill Kane, which, again, no one's sad. Maybe Scott, but no one's sad.
Vlad is, like, this animal lion man. Like, it's giving me very Mumford and Sons, weep, little lion man.
Yeah, it's so wild. They want to blame the fact that he's a lion because Maddie isn't, like, a, quote, like, pure spider person or something, and it's...
Yeah, so the short version of a story that goes on for a little while, Sasha Craven gets the three Craven children, Vlad, who's now a lion, Al and Anna, who are both still alive, and they are all going after spider people. And Madame Web gets captured and killed during this. Spider Girl, Maddie Franklin, gets captured and killed during this. The resurrection of Sergei that happens when Spider-Man has to die, but now Spider-Man's the only one that can kill Kraven, otherwise he's going to be immortal. So he runs around in the comics for a really long time and then eventually wants to die again. And the story that takes him out, he clones like 47 versions of himself, and the one clone that survives gets to be his actual heir. But also he gets a bunch of white, rich poacher hunter guys to like sign up for a program where he captures, this is Sergei, captures animal-themed supervillains and locks them in cells in Central Park under a force field. And then he lets all the white billionaires pilot like little suits to hunt down the animal villains for a thrill. But really anyone who does it ends up getting killed. So Sergei's plot here is, I now have a worthy heir. All the animal-themed villains who are like bastardizing animals will die, plus all the billionaire poachers. And then he kills himself at the end because he dresses himself in a Spider-Man suit. And now he's dead and his clone is running around. That's the short version of this. But in the conclusion of the Last Hunt storyline, do you want to talk about
favorite part? Yeah, yeah. It's so wild.
Kraven takes his kids to the Savage Land and his wife Sasha, and what does he do?
So he looks at Vlad and he's like, "You're an abomination, murdered." Sasha complains about the conditions in the Savage Land, murdered. Then he throws out Al and Anna, just being like, "You need to prove yourself worthy. Okay, bye." So then Anna shows up later without Al, and she's like, "Yeah, I killed that other guy." But like, we don't see him die. We don't see it. And then we're just sort of like left with that. But again, I love the fact that Kraven takes his whole family and be like, "We are a family. I hate all of you, murdered."
So wild, wild, wild family lore here. Al has never come back. That was in 2011. Anna's shown up a few times, including a story where she gets Terrigenesis and we don't know what her powers are.
It's blue cheetah pants.
Yeah. And Luciano Vecchio draws her once, which is fun. Yes. But she's still out there. Sasha's dead. Vlad is dead. Al is reportedly dead. Kraven or Sergei is dead. The Chameleon's still around. The bastard son of Kraven in Hollywood is probably still around over there with whatever is happening in that world. And then we have the clone of Kraven, who's now the new Kraven the Hunter, populating the comics. Scott, how you feeling over there?
A lot of confusing memories. And like, I've read all this stuff and I still can't tell you like what exactly is going on here. I will say, fun thought experiment with Krakoan Resurrection, Al could be alive and back out there making shitty films.
Or it may be that she never killed him in the first place and he went off in the Savage Land somewhere. Is there a version of this is a wild, we take some wild rides on this Patreon channel, but this is a wild, crazy, we started with a movie and legacy and then jumped into like the three phases of this character. Is there a version of Al Kraven that you would like to see in the comics? Is there like a way to put him in a book where he's interesting, where he's less probable problematic and we get to enjoy the parts of him that are fun. What are those things that you would want to highlight in a book? Were he part of one?
So if he were to come back, whether Anna never killed him or he gets resurrected by the Krakoan protocols or whatever, or resurrected by some other crazy Kraven way, I think him going back to his original, like, I am a sad boy who likes to get naked and wrestle with animals, and go back to just being like high camp villain, I think is his best era. And I think that's where, in my opinion, I feel like that's where he works the best. I feel, and like have him show up and be like, hey clone, fuck you, this is my gig, like no one's gonna be sad Kraven, that's me, and like takes out the clone. Like I think he should go back to like that sort of campy, hot, probably fucks any human and animal.
We see someone like Leah Williams take this character, like look what she did with Dawkin, or right, like there's a, or Blob, there's a version of this guy where there's a sympathetic story, his connection to animals, like his desire to preserve or break away from family legacy. Like he can be really hot, and that theme of him wanting to break the system and make change, I think is the more interesting piece. I think there could be a really interesting like brother-sister dynamic between he and Anna, especially if they decide to go take down their dad's clone, right? Like there's some interesting story potential for him, but you almost have to completely wash away almost all of his past in order to do it, which again, someone like Leah Williams is great at that piece.
All that right. Stuff in the middle, like just that can all just go away.
Scott, yeah. What are your thoughts here?
I agree with Demanda. I think if you're going to bring him back, you bring him back as the sort of 90s edgy version, because the 2000s version is so incredibly problematic. I don't think you can do that. I think, you know, the issue with Kraven is, I think outside the story, killing all the minor Kravenoffs off and then just saying the clone of the original Kraven is the new Kraven was just a way to simplify the Kravens. So now you just have this guy who's functionally the original Kraven. I don't know if bringing back like any of the other Kravens is something that like would ever happen, because I feel like there are people at Marvel who are just like, this is too effing confusing. And we have, you know, like, we just want the original Kraven. We don't need like his bisexual, like dog fucker son or the Grim Hunter or any of these other ones. But, you know, I think if you are going to bring him back as that sort of edgy, like he's edgy 90s Kraven, and, you know, put him.
You said dog fucker son. What did you mean?
I mean, he can talk to Anna. I don't know.
Is it implied anywhere that he fucked an animal?
No, that was me and Scott being like, he seems like he probably fucks some animals.
Okay. I was just checking. I'm like, did I miss that piece?
No, it's just like, particularly by the time you get to the 2000s stuff, and I don't know if this is the function of like Zimmerman's writing, you know, where the bit in like the bar where he's talking to Vulture and then all the Hollywood stuff, they portray him as very sexually lascivious. Like he's going to fuck whatever. And I would move away from that. Like the joke about like Cyclops being gay, it's very like 2000s, but you know, he's still just like, oh yeah, I'd still fuck him. And it's like, this has not aged well.
Dawkin wakes up in bed with Al Kraven and has no use for this man. There's some interesting story potential. The fact that he's a mutant makes him really interesting, but that piece of him talking to animals, there's a sympathetic piece to that. The bastard son, the family legacy, the idea of like fighting who he is and figuring out what he's not, I think you can read his chronology in that way, and it's interesting. It also makes me think of the movie we just saw differently, because it captures all of these themes, but we see it expanded by 400 here, you know, in the comic books over years. This has been an interesting conversation. Thank you for joining me for this little adventure. We're going to put this out on Wednesday. I'd love to hear any final thoughts you guys have, and where can people find you online? Anything you would like to plug? By the time you guys hear this, we will have already done the Alpha Flight panel together, so I get to hang out with you all again tomorrow, which I'm thrilled about.
So, final thoughts on Kraven. Like, Kraven is just so, he's so messy, which again, we usually love mess because mess is kind of fun to play in when you're talking about like stuff with like high drama. I as I said before, I think making him sort of like fun and camp again would be a way to go if they were to ever bring Al back. The movie's not good. Wait for it to be on streaming, and until then, just Google image out Aaron Taylor Johnson just being hot. Demanda Martini, you can find me across all social media @Demanda Martini. Again, most of you all, I'm sure, I already know. So kind of coming up, I have a bunch of, but something that I'm really excited about is next year I'm venturing into a big project doing a weekly cooking series where I create dessert things based on X-Men characters, based on the Luciano Vecchio trading cards that I just got. So this first month of January, I've sort of like put characters into like a theme for a month. So the first theme of January, I will be filming very soon for all five episodes because there's five Fridays in January. So I'm very excited to venture into this new thing. So stay tuned. Hopefully I can keep it up.
Delightful to see you, my friend.
Final thoughts. Wait for the Kraven movie to hit streaming. I don't condone heavy drinking, but have a couple drinks. Watch it. It's ridiculous. Like, but don't pay money. Al Kraven, interesting character. There is potential for him to come back. Don't read Get Kraven. It's really, like, I know this got very heavy during the Get Kraven section. It is not a good comic. It's very bad. It's offensive. You're aware that it exists. Skip it. As for me, you can find me on social media, Scott Free, my own podcast. If this is coming out this coming Wednesday, the first episode of The Clone Conspiracy will be dropping on Friday. So if you're curious about how Kane, for example, killed the Grim Hunter by touching his face, tune in.
I can't wait. I texted Scott, like, I want to come on your show. And I meant to type about Messy Spider-Man, but it auto-corrected to Missy Spider-Man. So now I just want to come talk about Missy Spider-Man with you sometime.
Oh, well, don't worry. I have plans.
I love being the guy that's gathering a community to talk about these crazy journeys. It changes the way I see my childhood. And, you know, 12-year-old Scott gets to go back and go, what the fuck did I read? Now that you're analyzing it as an adult, those are fun things. That era, that early 2000s era of books were like violence on the page. And like, this is where like the Thunderbolts got canceled. And there was like that little run at the end about like the pro wrestler before they relaunched the book. This is where there's a bunch of crazy shit in this like early 2000s like run of books post Marvel bankruptcy, like pre new creative energy. I don't know, but it's also the new Morrison, or the Grant Morrison on new X-Men era. I don't know, crazy stuff. This was a weird journey. I don't know how I'm feeling. I'll sort it out later. We're wrapping up the year on the show. This is going to be the final episode on the Patreon. New year, we're going to keep doing Patreon episodes every Wednesday, but there's a whole new format on the main show, so watch for that. Follow the show, Gray Malkin underscore Lane on Instagram. I'm really excited about the stuff that's coming up. We're opening the year with a massive script reading of Giant Size X-Men number one. It's so fucking great. I have it edited. It's brilliant. And the first Patreon episode of the year will be all about both versions of the Executioner, except there's no E's, so it's just Excussioner, the way they fucking spell that character's name. And both of them are the worst. So we'll dive into that crazy continuity as well. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Demanda. Thank you, Scott. We will see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel.